Drive Time on RTE Radio 1. Sponsored by Zurich. For pensions, protection, savings and investments. At Zurich, we deal in peace of mind.
Now, as you've been hearing, that devastating 7.7 earthquake that hit Myanmar earlier today, where emergency services and rescuers continue to scour through collapsed and damaged buildings with hundreds feared dead. Earlier, I spoke with Donegal TikToker Travis Leon Price, who's in Bangkok, and I asked him where he was when the quake hit.
So I was in my condominium. I'm located up in the 40th floor in the city centre. And that's actually the space where I do my work every single day. So I was sitting on my desk, and my chair was swiveling a little bit. And my initial reaction was that I'm swiveling too much. I feel a bit nauseous. And I tried to kind of slow myself down. And then I thought, oh, God, this is not the chair. I think I'm getting vertigo. So I stood up and kind of tried to get to my senses, and basically the balcony door slid right open, and that's kind of when I realized, right, I think this is an earthquake.
And the room was swaying from side to side, you say?
It was. Very surreal. You know, up in the 40th floor, it's quite high up here. So you have a good look at the city. You have a good view of the city here. And when I kind of moved out to the balcony, there's a big drop down. And basically the balcony was swaying forward and back. And I've never experienced anything like that in my life. I thought the building might collapse. I freaked out.
It must have been really frightening, because I know you shared footage as well, and I saw the water from swimming pools on rooftops across the way, literally as though they were being shaken and the water falling down across over the building.
Well, that was my second confirmation, so I ran outside to take a look. I mean, I didn't know really what I was going to expect to see, but, you know, apart from the swaying back and forth, the main thing that gave it away was the pool water sloshing from side to side, just like someone was shaking it. And from my view, you can see all the rooftop pools, you know, across Bangkok, and I could see them all just kind of swirling like a washing machine. And yeah, that was kind of the moment where I was like, right, I'm gonna run downstairs.
Yeah, absolutely. And building fragments falling right down to the ground, you say. You said you had to get out of there. What did you do?
Well, I kind of realized that the lifts weren't going to be operational. And if they were, it's probably the last place you want to be during an earthquake. So I took the stairwell. And, everyone else was running down. Some people had babies, you know, some people were kind of quite terrified. And I could see cracks coming down the side of the stairwell. Okay. And there was kind of debris on the floor and everything. It was I didn't know what was going to happen. Was it going to collapse or what? I just had to keep running.
My God, you were fearing for your life, I'm sure.
Genuinely. And that's what most people say, that, you know, the friends I know here in Bangkok, everyone really thought that was it, especially people up on the high floors. You know, you just ran for your life. I didn't have any shoes on. I just ran out the door.
When you got to ground level then, what happened?
When we got to ground level, you could see everyone kind of outside. And by the way, it took quite a while to get to ground level from the 40th floor. It takes about 15 to 20 minutes. You think you're, you know, almost there, and you see there's kind of a sign beside the door. It's like level 20. And you're like, oh, my God, I'm only halfway there. And we kept going. And everyone was situated outside. All the traffic was stopped. Every single alarm was going off in the street, you know. And I sat outside the condo. And another big bang went off and everyone ran out of the building beside us. So I think debris was falling off the buildings around us.
My goodness. So tell me, any aftershocks? Do you have power? Where are you staying tonight?
Yeah, so I'm actually back in my condo. The building management wouldn't let us back in for another 3 to 4 hours, you know, in the fear of, you know, aftershocks coming after. They didn't really happen, not that we noticed. We checked online and it said there was actually aftershocks, maybe about kind of 4 or 5. But we didn't feel them at all. So we kind of got the all clear about 3 to 4 hours after. We went back to our condo and, you know, the lifts weren't working, so we had to climb 40 floors up. We're back up here now and there's no electricity, so we've got candles here.
I know it's there are hundreds feared dead, a 7.7 magnitude earthquake. I'm really, really glad you're safe and well. That's the main thing. Travis Leon.
Well, thank you so much.
From Donegal in Bangkok. Thank you for talking to us. And that is Donegal man, TikToker Travis Leon Price in Bangkok. there. I'm with now Christian Aid's head of Asia, Middle East and Europe, Julie Meegan. Julie, you're very welcome.
Thank you.
What can you tell me based on what you're hearing from your colleagues in Myanmar?
Yeah, what we're hearing are stories of widespread devastation. You know, there's significant damage to infrastructure, homes that have been completely flattened in the Mandalay Sagaing area, which is thought to be the epicenter. There were about 1.2 million people living within 20 kilometres of that epicenter. So this has caused massive destruction to people's lives. You know, we've heard of hospitals that are overwhelmed with injured people, places of worship that have collapsed, IDP shelters collapsed, internally displaced people who had been displaced from the war. Are now living in buildings that are either unsafe or have collapsed completely. Mm-hmm. So we're hearing about people that are under the rubble as well. And there's a nationwide power outage, which is making it really, really difficult to get a proper picture of everything that's going on.
And the situation in Myanmar as well, the rare call for international help as well. I know you're just back from Mandalay, a densely populated area, I'm sure.
It is, absolutely. And it's it's actually part of the dry zone in central Myanmar. And it's experienced a lot of natural disasters over the last few years, including just in September last, the super monsoon Yagi, which caused widespread flooding. Because, of course, if it is a dry zone and then it has a massive influx of water, then it's hard for the ground to absorb it, which causes flash flooding. Mm-hmm. We've also heard reports of the dam there collapsing, which we're very concerned about because the areas around it in Mandalay are very low, but they also service the agricultural sector. So they grow a lot of rice there, and then that would have been relied on for people's food and for agriculture.
It's a really desperate situation. Stay with me, Julie, if you can. I'm joined by Haider Yacoub now, who's from Yangon in Myanmar. Your country director for Global Development and Humanitarian, the humanitarian organisation Plan International. Haider, you're very welcome. What's happening? What can you tell me there?
Well, the situation in Yangon is fine. It's like we did feel the earthquake. It was one of the longest duration of earthquake I have ever experienced. So that has happened. But the situation in Mandalay is bad. It's bad. And my team is there. A couple of them were there. We have our operations in Niau, which is about 60, 70 kilometers west, miles west of Mandalay. So we are in that particular area, but not in Mandalay City as such.
Okay.
But the issue is more of Mandalay City, where there are lots of buildings which have come down, and there are some deaths reported there, about 144 by the junta as we speak, but the numbers are likely to be much higher than this.
And because of the devastation and the destruction of buildings and infrastructure, as you say, Haider, the rescue operation, the search operation is going to be extremely difficult.
I think it would be, and the numbers will increase once the report of the people who are in the rubbles are brought out, so the numbers are likely to go higher than they'll be corrected at the lower side, so they'll go up. The other reason which I feel is contributing to a lot of chaos at this point in time, mm-hmm, is the aftershocks. There are 10, 12 of them, and each one of them is more than four to six Richter scale. So that's the aftershocks are creating a lot of panic in public at this point in time.
The aftershocks were 6 on the Richter scale.
Yes.
Oh, wow. Oh, my goodness. That is really high, isn't it? For how long? You say it went on for a very long time, the earthquake. How long did it go on for?
When you live through it, it looks like lifetime.
Yeah.
That's how you feel. But it was about a minute or so, but maybe there were two of them, one after the other. So it's very difficult to figure out. They might have stopped for a minute or half a minute in between, but it looked that they were going endlessly long, because I was in my office on the third floor, and I thought that some things are moving. It's not right. I stepped out. I looked at the water in a big water dispenser. The The whole dispenser was moving. The water inside was moving, so which told me that something is happening here. I stayed there for a little while. Then I asked someone else, do you feel anything which is happening here? They said, yeah, there might be an earthquake. And then we stepped to the exit, the fire exit or the safety exit. We stayed there for a while. And we said to each other, this is not coming to an end. What is happening here? So it was that long. We were having conversations. Okay. And in earthquake, it's usually you run out, you do things, and it's over. It's fallen on you or you're, it's finished. Yes. So it was continuing
and
for a long time.
Frightening, I'm sure. And I have, and I'm sure many of our listeners have never experienced an earthquake in this part of the world. Was there a noise? Could you hear a noise during the earthquake, Haider?
No, I could not. I have been in earthquakes in Kashmir and in Nepal. So I know a bit about earthquakes from my previous experience. But this was not noisy. Pakistan, people say and we hear that there was noise, but maybe north from not because of the shifting of tectonic plates, mm-hmm. but because of the rumbles which fall. So in this particular case, in Yangon, we could not hear anything.
Okay.
It seemed as if things are moving or swaying in different directions. Okay. And people got panicked, even in Yangon.
Can I ask you before I let you go, I know your organization, Plan International, are going to be on the front line now in terms of the aid effort. And Plan Ireland are launching an appeal here in response to the earthquake. What can you tell me about all of that?
Look, we are here to help. We've been helping for the public of Myanmar for the last since 2008. We have been here working for people of Myanmar, and we will be here for people of Myanmar for as long as they need our support. So we are continuing supporting general public who need support from us for a long time, and we'll continue doing that. Okay. And I'm sure if Irish people are generous to support Plan in its effort, we'll be very happy to fulfill whatever we promise to the utmost of our ability. That's okay. What we try to do. So,
well, Haider Yaqub in Yangon and Myanmar, thank you very much indeed for joining us, and I'm glad you're safe. And Haider works for the global and humanitarian organization Plan International. Julie Meegan is with me still, Christian Aid's head of Asia, Middle East and Europe. It's worth reminding people as well, and they might feel they could donate a little bit here to the aid effort, that there's a freeze on US foreign aid still, Julie, isn't there?
Yeah, that's absolutely right. There's been massive aid cuts globally, and this has really impacted on organizations trying to operate in what is already a challenging context in Myanmar. So they've seen reductions in staffing, they've had to scale down their operations, all while operating in a context of war, as Haider was talking about there. And of course, this also erodes trust in international organizations, you know. but I think that, and you know, hundreds of staff have lost their jobs over the last few months as well. So it does make it really, really difficult. But I think it's important to remember that we work with some amazing civil society organizations who mm-hmm. are on the ground and who are rooted in the communities there. And so if we can get them the support that they need, they can work with communities to get them food, to get them cash, water, what they really need at the moment, shelter, first aid. Mm-hmm. And so Christian Aid Ireland actually has an appeal which people can give to on their website, which will be supporting our partners there to do exactly that.
Okay, and like every disaster like this, the earliest hours are the most when there's the most utmost and urgent of need for donations and so on. Julie Meegan, Christian Aid's Head of Asia, Middle East and Europe, thank you very much indeed. The latest confirmation we have in terms of the death toll is 144 people, but as we've been saying since the start of the programme, many hundreds feared dead.